Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, good morning, happy new year from Rome. This is a special edition of Solder Smoke, edition number 73, a very fitting number to start the new year. And I think we've got a lot of very interesting material for you. I think you guys will like this one. Things have been kind of accumulating in the Solder Smoke inbox, and it's all good stuff. I'd like to start out this month with mention of some really interesting work that came to my attention via the QRP-L mailing list, which is, of course, a very important source of information for everybody in the homebrew QRP community. Mike, Alpha Alpha 1, Tango Juliet, had a couple of, a few messages there. Usually, they started out with reference to his 1950s era germanium transistor running 45 milliwatts. And Mike published on the web some really nice pictures of the little transmitter, and with examples of a logbook showing the stations that he worked with the 45 milliwatts. Great pictures of his antennas. And the other thing about Mike, I put this on the Gadgeteer.news website. I have nominated him, if I can do that, to be the official poet laureate of QRP and home brewing. I, as you guys can imagine, this position has been vacant for quite some time. I guess George Dobbs is the closest we've had, but he's busy with other duties, running the GQRP Club in Spratt. Poetry occasionally makes it into that publication. Much of it comes from George. Of course, the famous bit about it is vain to do more when you could do more with less, or whatever. You know what I'm talking about. I always like that kind of motto for QRP. But we have another poet among us now, Alpha Alpha 1, Tango Juliet, Mike. And I'm looking now at the picture of his little germanium 1950s retro QRP transmitter, 45 milliwatts. Beautiful work. And I think Mike has sparked something of a craze here of getting back on the air with, not with silicon, but with germanium. I myself have used germanium in the diodes for the in the diode for my crystal radio that we talked about a while back, the one that we built in London, the original, before we switched over to Fool's Gold. The original detector in there was germanium. And so I feel a certain connection here with the Mike's efforts with the germanium transistors. And Mike, you know, he's included many different bits of poetry in the message. I really like some of them here. It says here we've got one message here. Let's see, a response to one of Mike's messages. This one's from Bob, K6KL. It says, "Mike, what you have demonstrated is just how powerful nature's electric force is. including the radiation it can produce, over a billion, 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 billion times stronger than gravity, by one, not completely fair, comparison. Wiggle just one tiny electron anywhere in the universe, and that movement, that acceleration and deceleration of the electron, is felt by every other electron everywhere. That huge power of the electric force is why radio is so effective. All you have to do is make a signal slightly larger than the prevailing noise, which is itself created by either moving charged particles, by other moving charged particles like electrons, at the receiving point, and you can be heard anywhere with even tiny numbers of milliwatt wiggling electrons at the transmit point. Indeed, Bob, that's right. And Mike and many other QRP aficionados have proven that every day. Let me looking through the. Oh man, not supposed to bump the microphone like that. Let's see. Here's some more poetry from Alpha Alpha One Tango Juliet. Let's see. It says here. Oh, it's just a nice message from Mike. He's responding to Jerry. It says, "Hi Jerry, thanks for the nice message. Gosh, your mention of the GE transistor manual takes me back. My dad returned home once from the VA hospital one day back in the early 70s with a copy of the 7th edition of the GE transistor manual for me. He said someone had left it on his bus seat. All he knew was that it had something to do with electronics and that I'd probably like it. Like it? I went crazy over it. Biasing circuits, tunnel diodes, the stuff of dreams. To this day, I can't look at the orange and blue cover and not instantly remember my father and that happy day." Yeah, I think this story resonates with many of us. My father used to come home from work. He was a New York City policeman, and he used to come home, you know, when he'd be working a late tour, be coming home late at night, and he would find on the kitchen table a copy of the ARRL manual, ARRL handbook, opened up to, I suppose I was looking at that point at the circuit, the diagrams for SSB phasing type transmitters. And he told me once, he said he wondered, what is that kid up to? Mike goes on. "Jerry, at your suggestion, I'm going to try and locate some of the earlier editions. Yes, mathematics is wonderful. Although there was a time in my life when I wouldn't listen to the news or other bits of irrelevant trivia for fear that it would distract me from doing my maths. I still have a passion for it, but also a bit more balance in my life these days, too." And some poetry. "Excess is the pest of pleasure, and self-restraint is not its scourge, but its spice." There you go. Michael de Montaigne. Let's see. So, thanks very much to Mike for sharing the circuitry and poetry and philosophy from, looks like he's up in New England. I think he said Vermont. And I encourage everybody to take a look at Mike's page. I've put links to it on the Gadgeteer news website. And by the way, we had a major update on the Gadgeteer News website, and I did some of them on Christmas Day, and it was I sent a message around saying this was kind of a digital stocking stuffer from Solder Smoke. Say that five times fast, please. I found some videos that I knew you guys would be interested in. I found one of Marconi himself giving a speech, I think at the inauguration of the Vatican radio station. And I found that because I was visiting the website of the Vatican shortwave transmitter facilities north of Rome. I passed this on the road one day, and I said, "Wow!" I said these antennas are amazing. So I included some links to that on the GetYourTier.News website. Also, I finally put the link up there about the IT guy on the South Pole. This morning, I found some interesting stuff, and I put that up on the web. It's really interesting, and it's kind of apropos of what we're going to discuss later in today's show. It's a video from France. An OM in France has succeeded in building homebrew tubes. This is something that's that pops up every once in a while in the kind of boat anchor old radio community mailing lists. You know, build your own tubes, homebrew tubes. Whenever it comes up, somebody, usually me, makes the joke that all you guys with your store-bought tubes, you're a bunch of appliance operators, real hams, roll their own triodes. anyway, whenever it comes up, it usually sparks a big debate about whether it's possible, whether it's impossible, whether hams can do it, whether these are really amplifying tubes. It's the kind of technical debate I'm talking about, the kind of discussion that we all engage in quite frequently. Anyway, I'm convinced that it's possible, and if you take a look at this video, a link to which is on my webpage, you'll watch this guy in France actually build one of these things. Now, he's got some really sophisticated gear, and I don't think all of it is in his home shack, but part of the construction is done, believe it or not, with the scissors in a Swiss Army knife, which I found strangely admirable. I'm sure you guys will know what I mean, but check it out. The video, I think, it's really excellent. Let's see, what else do we have here? I guess we better get this out of the way. All right, I promise this is going to be quick. It's going to be very brief. And I hope largely painless, but this will be, I promise, the last reference to Bollywood here on Solder Smoke. I realize the connection to ham radio is a bit tenuous, but actually I found another one, and I have to make mention of this thing. Okay, you know the story. I am in the Bollywood movie. As part of my stocking stuffer effort on Christmas Day, I decided to let you guys take a look at the trailer for the movie Cheney Coombe. It's available on the web. Of course, the producers want this thing to circulate so people will actually buy the movie, so we're not engaged in any kind of intellectual property violation here. But I found the trailer, and in the course of looking at it, I discovered that not only did I make it into the movie, but I made it into the trailer. So if you guys fire up the trailer on the on your web browser there, it's a YouTube video, and a link to it is on my Gadgeteer News website. If you put the thing in full screen mode and freeze it at about 53, 54, or 55 seconds, I'm the guy sitting there on the left of the screen drinking a latte in the Starbucks on Fulham Road in London. So you don't have to buy the movie. You don't have to wait till it appears on your local TV station. You can take a look at the trailer and check out M0HBR in London. Okay, here's the final radio connection. The other day, I shot a message to our friend Farhan in India, and just kind of mentioned to him, "Hey, Farhan, have you heard about my big break in Bollywood?" He said, "No, tell me about it." So I shot back another one. I told him that I was in Cheney Coombe, co-starring with the Big B and Taboo. And I could sense the astonishment that this provoked in Farhan. Well, not only is it astonishing that I would be in a Bollywood movie, that's pretty astonishing in itself, but the thing is, The leading lady in the movie, Taboo, turns out to be a friend of the family of our friend Farhan, and so he knows her, and you know, she's apparently from his hometown, and they're family friends, and I thought that was kind of a strange coincidence. It also turns out that another friend of his, he said, I hope I get the pronunciation right, Nagesh Kukunor, actually wrote the original script of Chinnikum. So there's a lot of connections there. One final mention, because our friend Farhan now, apparently he has some important connections in Bollywood. His friend Nagesh, I think, wrote the script for another really famous Bollywood movie called Hyderabad Blues. And there is, in Hyderabad Blues, a character named Ashar Farhan. It's not our friend, but I guess Farhan's friend, the director, decided to throw his name into the movie. So there you go. Check it out, the trailer for Chinnikum. And that, I promise, is my last mention of Bollywood here. Unless, of course, something interesting comes up, we'll let you know. Let's see, what else we have here? I guess we have a theme about early radio here, Marconi tubes and all that. And there'll be more on it in a minute, but I just wanted to mention a book that I don't think has gotten as much attention as it should get. It's called Early Radio by Peter Jensen. I think I might have mentioned this in a Solder Smoke episode a while back, but it's the kind of book that every one of us should have on the bookshelf. Peter is an Australian ham. He also has a UK call, but I guess during the early 90s, he decided to retrace the steps of Marconi, and he made a trip with his family to Italy, into the UK, and visited all the important sites, did a lot of research, and produced a really beautiful, very, very well done, well written, and well photographed book about the great inventor and his life and his inventions. And I think one of the really admirable things about the book is not only is that first kind of historical part very interesting, but then he went on to build many of the pieces, to reproduce many of the pieces of gear that Guglielmo Marconi used in his experiments as a young radio inventor. So check it out. I mean, it's not difficult to find. It's still available on Amazon, and you can find it through the Gadgeteer bookstore. There are links for that on the various websites, and it does help. It does help out the Solder Smoke effort if you buy your Amazon books through the Gadgeteer bookstore. It doesn't have to be one of the books in the bookstore. Anytime you buy an Amazon book, if you come at Amazon through the Gadgeteer bookstore, it helps us out. We get a few pennies in the coin box there. So anyway, check out Peter Jensen's book, Early Radio, about Marconi. I think you'll like it very much. I mentioned these antennas. I'm telling you, this is the antenna farm of all antenna farms. It's we go up to this lake north of Rome called Bracciano, and on the way up there, I passed this the most amazing antenna farm I ever saw, and just enormous towers, and they go on and on. I couldn't figure out what it was. I came back here to the shack, did some Googling, and it turns out it's the shortwave antennas for Vatican Radio. They're at Santa Maria di Galleria. And anyway, I put links to the sites up on the Gadgeteer News page. Check it out. There's also some Google Earth information. These things are so big, of course, you can see them from Google Earth. And I think you'd be really interested. I was trying to figure out what kind of array they were using. It looked to me like there was so much wire up there. It looked like some sort of Streba curtain. But somebody wrote in and said, no, they're just big, really big, multiple element collinear arrays. to get a really low radiation angle. Anyway, it's definitely the kind of thing when you look at it, you think, I wonder if we can convince them to let us hook up an HW8 to that thing when they're not transmitting and see what we could do. I bet you we could do some damage with an HW8 with those antennas. Anyway, I think you guys will like it. Check it out. Speaking of Google and Google Earth, I just had to throw mention in this because I think you guys will like it. In the course of my web surfing this week, came across an article alerting me to the fact that our friends at Google have thrown in some new features on Google Earth on the new version, on the 4.2 version. It's available, of course, free for download. But when you download it, in there, in the software, is a free flight simulator. It lets you take off from airports of your choice, and using the controls on your keyboard, or better yet, a joystick if you have one, fly the airplanes around. You could fly a little prop plane, or you could fly, I think, an F-15. And you activate the thing by going to Control-Alt-A on Google Earth version 4.2. Do Control-Alt-A, and that'll activate the flight simulator feature in the software. It's a lot of fun. I instantly discovered that I do not know how to keep an airplane aloft, and my little prop plane went into a spin from which I could not recover, and I watched the English countryside near Heathrow rise up towards me. So anyway, check it out. I think you guys enjoy that feature. In terms of home brewing here, Mixer Madness continues. I continue my effort to get a better understanding of how mixers operate. Found a lot of good articles. I posted some of them on the Gadgeteer News website. I think some of you will find them interesting. This is, of course, part of the black boxophobia, a kind of a subcondition of the knack. This is black boxophobia, or the curiosity curse, as somebody else put it. And I just don't think that I really understand how those sum and difference products pop out of a device as simple as an ordinary diode, for example. So my latest effort to get better understanding involves our old friend LT Spice. I have yesterday fired up LT Spice and created in the simulator a very simple mixer. And I've got inputs, one driving the diode into switching mode, and the other the signal that we're using to mix with it. And LT Spice lets you take a look at the oscilloscope patterns of the inputs and the output, and hopefully it will help me along on the path towards mixer enlightenment. So that's what I'm working on. On the bench, the other things that we have on the bench right now this week, it's totally unrelated to ham radio, but you might find it interesting. One of the things that was under the Christmas tree on Christmas morning was the a little box called Dirty Old Coins. And I think that's the name of the outfit. Let me get it here. It's called, dirtyoldcoins.com. You could find it. And really smart idea. This company in the States will sell you a little box, and it comes with five ancient coins dug up somewhere by metal detector fans, and you get the coins, you get a little CD, a little booklet on them. Anyway, you clean them up and you find out where they're from, and sure enough, we found one in our batch that was really identifiable, and we figured out which emperor it represented, and it came from about 250, the year 250. So we're sitting here at the workbench with something from the year 250, from commemorating the Roman Emperor from that period. Anyway, so that's what's going on the workbench. Looking at the list here, what else do we have? Oh, yeah, astronomical news. I think you guys may have heard that there's a possibility that an asteroid will hit Mars on January 30th. The possibilities are still pretty small, but apparently increasing. It's going to also hit near the area of the Opportunity rover. It's going to create a hole about the size of a meteor crater in Arizona. And, of course, this will be of great interest to people, to astronomers, probably to radio amateurs in general. And wouldn't it be great if we get those cameras on the Opportunity rover aimed in the right direction to watch this thing happen? So we'll see. All right. That brings us to the segment that you've all been waiting for. Cue the gong, please. Yeah, Solder Smoke Mailbag. I got a nice message from an old friend from Northern Virginia, Jake N4UY, a fellow member of the NOVA, the Northern Virginia QRP Club, a great organization that I was privileged to be a member of during my time back in Virginia. I guess we were there from 96 to 2000. Great fun, great bunch of guys. And Jake sent a message just seeing how we're doing and wondering when we're going to get back to Northern Virginia. I told him probably summer 2010. That's when we'll go back. But I look forward to meeting up with Jake. Jake's been a great help over the years. He probably doesn't remember, but on a number of different projects, when I needed something like a 88 millihenry telephone toroid, he was kind enough to stick it in a box and send it to me. So thanks again for that, Jake, and look forward to seeing the NOVA QRP gang when we eventually get back to the USA. Got a this is an important public service announcement that we have to do here. Got a nice email from Steve G0FUW Fox Uniform Whiskey in Bath, in England, and he is involved in something right now called the Bath Build-A-Thon. They're going to have it on the 26th of January. It says, ever wanted to have a go at home brewing your own transceiver? Studying for the intermediate license exam and don't know what project to build? Then here's the event for you. The first Bath Build-A-Thon is to be held January 26, 2018. Encourage newcomers to have a go at home brewing. The Build-A-Thon will allow those with limited soldering experience to develop their skills under the watchful eye of some very experienced home brewers, Elmers. These events are popular in the States, but this is thought to be the first one of its kind in the UK. The kit chosen for the Bath Build-A-Thon is the Brendan DSB transceiver from Tim Walford's Somerset range of kits. The QRP transceiver has been specifically designed for the newcomer so that you can be confident that you will go home with a working 80-meter voice transceiver. The Build-A-Thon will take place in Bath on Saturday, the 26th of January, and is planned to run from 9 to 1700. All soldering and test equipment will be made available on the day, and refreshments will be provided. All you need to bring is a bucket full of enthusiasm and a packed lunch. The cost of the day will be £60 to include the cost of kit, refreshment, room hire, etc. The event is open to anyone who would like to try out home brewing for the first time. Excellent. All right. Anyway, if you're interested, contact Steve Hartley, and his email is golf0 Fox Uniform Whiskey, G0FUW at tiscali.co.uk. Very good. Good luck with that. That project, Steve. Let us know how it goes. Very good. We got a nice email from Nigel, M0NDE, updating us on homebrew activities there in Dover, working on some CW kit, some CW gear there in the shack. Hope you have a good homebrew year there, Nigel, and keep the messages coming in. Thanks a lot. We have a band sweep segment. I guess we have to have a pause here. I guess we need some sort of a cue for band sweep. But, Mike, WA6ARA, was kind enough to send us in a band sweep. This is 40 meters on straight kenite. Very appropriate. And I know a lot of you guys were on the air last year at this time. Kind of sad for me to remember, but last year on straight kenite, Mike was very pleased because Mike KL7R, because his big contact on straight kenite was he talked to Wes W7ZOI, and that turned out to be Mike's last straight kenite, and he was really just delighted to talk to Wes on that evening. So let's listen to Mike's clip of straight kenite. Thanks to Mike WA6ARA. Here we go. Thanks a lot. Thanks for that, Mike. One of the things that, bits of feedback that I've been getting from Sada Smoke listeners is that people really miss the kind of two-way QSO conversation that Mike and I used to have when we started this thing. So in an effort to get more of that going here in the show, on this first Sada Smoke episode of the new year and the 73 edition of Sada Smoke, I'm going to include part one of a conversation that I had with Andy, ZS6ADY in South Africa. Andy is a boat anchors collector, a collector of old radios, and I think that's I think the boat anchor people, the folks who collect, restore, rebuild old boat anchor radios. There, it's a group that's closely related to the QRP homebrewers. It's the we're part of the small group of radio enthusiasts who still mill solder and work on gear and try to figure out how these devices operate and keep them going. And there's a lot of overlap between the QRP community and the boat anchor folks. So I thought you guys would be interested in hearing this Echolink conversation that I had a week or so ago with Andy, and Andy has kindly given me permission to put him on Solder Smoke. So I'll break this up into two or three parts. I think you guys will appreciate it. So here's part one of conversation with Andy, ZS680Y.
ZS680Y, this is M0HBR stroke Italy 0, M0HBR stroke I 0. Are you there, Andy?
Yes, M0HBR, ZS680Y. Well, good morning to you, Bill. And nice to hear you. See, you're from the United Kingdom. You don't sound like you're from the United Kingdom, though. But very good morning to you. Of course, name beside is Andy, and the QTH is in Benoni in South Africa. And a lovely, bright, sunny morning here this morning. M0HBR, ZS680Y.
Okay, Andy, very good. ZS680Y, M0HBR, very fine. Yeah, well, my location and call sign and nationality situation is even more confused than you think. Because I'm actually in Rome, Italy. I'm listed in Echolink under the my UK call sign, but I'm actually now living in Rome. We were in the UK for 4 years, and you could probably tell from my my voice that I'm from a bit further to the west. I'm from the US, but now we're here in Rome, and I'm just waiting for the Italian call signs to be. Call sign to be processed. Hey, Andy, I see you're a fan of boat anchor rigs and old equipment. I see there on the screen, very very fine. All that good old Collins stuff. I'm envious. I am a boat anchor fan myself, but at kind of the lower end of the equipment spectrum. The HW101 and all those rigs. The poor man's Collins. ZS680Y M0HBR.
All right, M0HBR, ZS680Y. Well, very nice, Bill, and all fine on your situation there. See, you're waiting for your Italian call sign. And I wonder what kind of salt mine activities you're involved in, that you seem to travel around quite a bit. And all fine on the boat anchors. Yes, I've been very interested in them. I started off with Halicrafters equipment, HT37 and a SX100 receiver, which was given to me when I started my ham radio affair, I tend to call it. and I rewired and virtually rebuilt the HT37. And since that time, I've had a great interest in the old boat anchors. And I've been very fortunate over the years to have collected a good couple of boat anchors. And I was president of the Antique Wireless Association here in Southern Africa for a year as well, which gave me a lot of connections. And I have a lot of people that phone me up and say, "Hey, Andy, I've got this stuff lying in my shack. I'm going to throw it. I'm going to turf it. Do you want it?" And I go and collect all these things and bring them back to my QDH and then distribute them out to guys in the Antique Wireless Association. So we have quite a few guys who collect them and restore them to the original old states. And the HW100s, the old hot water 100s and 101s, we have a few guys who have them. Wonderful rigs, they work very well, as do most of the old valve rigs. So we like them. Of course, I've got a modern rig as well, one or two modern rigs, but the majority of my stuff is all the old boat anchors, mainly Collins and Halicrafters that I have. But of course, I suppose it depends on what you manage to lay your hands on. Is what you tend to use. M0HBR, ZS680Y.
Yeah, ZS680Y, M0HBR, stroke Italy 0. Okay, Andy, real fine. Well, very interesting. Well, I have it here. It's been here with me so long, I don't even really consider it kind of an old rig. I consider it kind of normal. But, of course, it is an old one. It's the Drake 2B. I have my original receiver when I first got a real general class amateur radio license in the States back in 1973. So it's been with me for a while, and it's here, and I still use it all the time. Most of my boat anchor gear has been left in storage, in either in the United States or the storage facility in Belgium. I work for the U.S. Embassy, and that's what accounts for the kind of permanent de-expedition that I'm on. we've been here now for about 4 months. Before that, we were 4 years in London. Before that, we were 3 years out in the Azores. I was Charlie Uniform 2, Juliet Lima. But you mentioned the HT-37, and that was the transmitter that I used with the Drake 2B for many years. That was, I'm sure you know, a very common combination, the Drake 2B with the Helicrafters HT-37. It was a good combination. If you look at the ham radio magazines from the mid to late 1960s, you see lots and lots of stations with that configuration. Yeah, I always thought it was nice because if your space was limited, the Drake 2B with the 2BQ multiplier fit perfectly. I mean, to the millimeter on top of the HT-37. Of course, the HT-37 generated a lot of heat, so it was a good idea to put a muffin fan or something on it, so you wouldn't be cooking your Drake 2B in the process. But it fit perfectly, and it looked kind of nice. And having the receiver up off the desk there was kind of comfortable. So I ran that configuration a long time. I have not rewired my HT-37, although I've changed out the power supply filter caps a number of times and have done a lot of work on it. It's as you know, it's a real it's far from neat PC board wiring in there, Andy. It's a real blast from the past, a real return to point-to-point wiring. And I often think that somebody who's used to the more modern circuitry would just be horrified to pop open the bottom of an HT-37 and look how they did it. Look at how they did it in the old days. ZS680Y, M0HBR.
M0HBR, ZS680Y. Yeah, you're quite right, Bill. And the old HT-37 and Drake combination were always good. I've just been given the other day an SX42 and an SX43 receivers. The SX43 has the transformer has lost itself on that one, has burned out. But the SX42 is still in fairly good condition. And I'm looking at either adding these to my collection or getting rid of them, one of the two. What we normally do is the Antique Wireless Association here in South Africa is completely a non-profit organization. We just, we always say to guys, membership is sort of free, and it's by just being part of the group that you become part of the membership. And what we do is when we get rid of these old rigs, we ask the guys for donations for them. So the guys can pick up old boat anchors fairly cheaply from us, and we just take the donation. It pays for our call signs. It is 0AWA, and of course it pays for the publishing of our monthly newsletter, which goes out, and that's all we want to cover, those costs, you see. So it works out quite nicely. But the old HT-37, fantastic rigs. There's a few guys in South Africa who still use them. Part of the of our Antique Wireless Association, and the chaps really love them. They, of course, you know, sometimes it takes a bit of working, a bit of operation, especially when you work, guys, and you don't have some of the rigs don't have the automatic changeovers on the back between the antenna switching, and you have to manually switch these things, and often the guys will slip, and you'll get a heavy feedback come through, and I think it all adds to the joy of operating an old rig like that. But it certainly is great fun using them, and it's even greater fun restoring them. My project I'm busy with at the moment is I have an SX-28 and an SX-25, which I'm busy restoring at the moment, and myself and a friend who also has an SX-28. We're doing them together, so we've got them. We're going to get them standing on a workbench together, and go through them from top to bottom, restore them, clean them up. We try to keep these things as original as possible. You know, a lot of chaps want to take the cases and have them powder coated and all that sort of thing. But if the case is still in fairly good condition, we keep them as original as possible. Of course, the old electrolytics we normally tend to change out, and the old wax coated paper caps we will change out as well. And of course, there's always been some very good restoration tips available on the internet. And quite often when we change out caps, we just clean out the inside of the old cap and put a new one inside. So it still looks original, although it might not have original parts. But yeah, it's great fun restoring these things and bringing them back to life, and actually getting them up and working. And some of them are really tremendous rigs. They have wonderful front ends. And their reception is absolutely fantastic. So yeah, that's sort of the main activity around this site. We run an AM group, we run a CW group, all under the same call sign of our Antique Wireless Association. So I'm quite involved in that, and I enjoy it. I really do. And then on the opposite end, in the mobile, I have an ICOM 706 Mark II, which I run in my mobile. So you go from one end to the other. You take a little ICOM 706 and put it next to an HD37, and you wonder, where has technology gone and where's it come from? So very, very good. All noted on your salt mine activities. That must be quite interesting. And I should imagine also quite hair-raising to have to move around every 3 or 4 years. I'm sure that goes with the territory there, Bill. And must be very interesting work seeing all these different countries and actually being involved in the work in them. M0HBR /IO ZS681.
ZS680Y M0HBR. Yeah. Okay, Andy, you're great. Well, we'll forgive you the ICOM there and the mobile. I know that I've spent quite a bit of time in the world of boat anchor aficionados, and I know that some of your colleagues there in South Africa probably raise an eyebrow when they hear that you've got an ICOM. Even in the mobile, I mean, some guys can get pretty fanatical and purist about it. But we'll forgive you the ICOM because it's in the car. But I think you should be careful about running one of those things in the main shack there, Andy. The HT37, I really love that rig. And I'd have it with me here, but my shack is too small for it. I've had to kind of limit the amount of equipment that I've brought to the small apartment shack here in Rome, but when we return to the States and have a bigger shack, the HT37 will come back online. I always, you know, it's amazing how the design considerations when they built rigs like that. I think the HT37 was built the way it was for economy. They wanted to save money on the crystal filters. So there are no crystal filters in it, of course. It's a phasing rig. And you don't hear too many of those on the air. It always sounded good. People love the sound of the HT37, probably because it's a lot broader than the standard crystal filter rig. So you're using up a lot more bandwidth there. But I always got great comments on the audio. I used to use it with an aesthetic D104, and people love the sound of that thing. It had a real, almost kind of an AM quality sound to it. I took mine with me on an assignment to the Dominican Republic, and in the course of trying to fix something in there, my screwdriver slipped, and I shattered the worst possible part to shatter in that rig. It was one of the wafer switches on the operating switch. You know, they have that big ganged operating switch in there. And they're all unique parts. I mean, you can't just pop down to the local Radio Shack and pick up, you know, wafer number 4 on the operating switch of the HD-37. And so I was really in bad shape. It was my only rig at the time, and I was knocked off the air by this thing. And so I mentioned down at the local radio club what I had done, and they said, oh, yeah, yeah, contact Pericle, Hotel India 8 pop-up. He'll probably be able to help you out. And I didn't think that was very likely, but I gave Pericle a call, and sure enough, he told me that he had 2 or 3 HT-37s out in his garage, and that I could take whatever I want out of them. They were just sort of kind of carcasses. So one Saturday afternoon, I went out over there with the toolkit and found the wafer switch that I needed. Took it out of his, popped it into mine, and away I went. So there's a lot of HT-37s out there. Great rig. You mentioned the SX-43 and the SX-42. I think I had the 43, and I remember that one of them was sturdier than the other. The one I had was the 43. I think that was kind of the low budget version. And I remember that it was famous for physical mechanical instability problems. We had a friend of mine at the radio club in Virginia wanted one, so I gave it to him, and I think he was. It became his struggle with mechanical stability and not mine. One other rig I wanted to mention was the Hammerland Super Pro 600. What a great name for a receiver. And that was a real big, sturdy receiver. And I your mention of the replacing capacitors made me think of that receiver. I love the looks of that thing. That was a real boat anchor radio. There were guys in the maritime communication business who used to carry their SP600 with them from ship to ship, their own individual Super Pro. But I decided not to try to fix that one. It looked like too much of a challenge for me. So I think for me, discretion was the better part of valor. And I sold the SP600. I just did not want to think about going in there trying to replace those Black Beauty capacitors they have in there around the RF tuning section. I remember reading in a QST magazine from about 1966 about how difficult it was to fix a Super Pro 600, and that was 1966. Those were in the days when hams were hams and homebrew was the norm. So if they were complaining about how hard it was back then, I said, well, this is not for me. So I sold that one. ZS680Y, M0HBR.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Andy, ZS680Y, for that. We'll continue with part two of this conversation in the next episode and probably go to 3 parts. Hope you guys enjoyed the discussion of the old radios. And that brings us to the conclusion of this issue of Solder Smoke, Solder Smoke 73, the first issue of 2008. Hope you've enjoyed it. Wish you all the best of luck in 2008. Good luck, good DX. Good luck with all the projects. Good luck at the workbench. And I hope you continue to enjoy Solder Smoke. I appreciate all the email that everybody sends in. That's what keeps the show going. And again, thanks for listening in. 73 from Rome.